content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello and welcome to our March 2025 edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately? A program from the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. This program is brought to you by the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services, an organization of citizens, volunteers, and patrons all interested in supporting the library and the services it provides. The Friends Group was founded in 1989 and now has more than 300 members across North Carolina. If you'd like to join the Friends Group yourself, we'll have information on how to do that later in the program. This program is all about books available from the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. The library has more than 86,000 titles in its collection. Books and magazines are available in large print, braille, and talking books as well. The library also has more than 11,000 patrons across the state. If you are not a patron but are interested in becoming one, I'll have more information about that at the end of this program as well. This month, we'll look at some of the most popular books checked out in the month of February at the State Library of North Carolina, Accessible Books and Library Services. Let's begin the program today with a book called Stuart Woods' Golden Hour, and it's by Brett Battles and Stuart Woods. Now, Battles continues his authorized takeover of Woods' expansive turf with a tale that puts ex-CIA agent Teddy Fay in both the driver's seat and the hot seat. Here's the plot for this one. Long before Teddy ended his career as a rogue intelligence agent by faking his death in a plane crash, he masterminded Operation Golden Hour, a task force devoted to taking down the trust in whose name Tovar Lentz funded terrorist operations around the globe. Now Tovar's son, Felix Braun, chief executive of Braun Logistics and Security, has decided that it's payback time against the agents behind Golden Hour, killing three of them and targeting the rest. Current CIA Director Lance Cabot, one of the few people who know that Teddy's still alive and flourishing under the guise of both Centurion Pictures producer Billy Barnett and Mark Weldon, star of Centurion's new film, Storm's Eye, persuades him to go on the offense against whoever's executing his agents and leaving a trust signature behind. The publicity tour Mark Weldon is about to join in Italy for the screening of Storm's Eye at the World Thriller Film Festival will provide the perfect cover, argues Lance. And he's exactly right, for movie melodrama and off-screen maneuvering merge seamlessly with Teddy's mission against Felix Braun, who's very interested indeed to learn that the prime mover behind Golden Hour is still alive. Though there's never any serious doubt about how this will all end, Battles plots much more tightly than Woods did, though that's a low bar to clear, and fans of the series first developed as a counterpoint to the ancient Stone Barrington franchise will not be disappointed. Proof that the Golden Hour extends far beyond the ideal time to shoot movie exteriors. Once again, the name of that book is Stuart Woods' Golden Hour, and it's by Brett Battles and Stuart Woods as well. Now let's take a look at a new book called Bellevue. It's a novel by Robin Cook, and she's a best-selling author and master of the medical thriller. Robin Cook comes a new tale of suspense horror about a first-year resident whose life-shattering visions reveal the truth behind some of the greatest medical advances in the history of medicine. Here's the plot for this one. 23-year-old Michael Mitt Fuller starts his surgical residency with great anticipation at the nearly 300-year-old iconic Bellevue Hospital, following in the footsteps of four previous celebrated Fuller generations. Now, the pressure is on for this newly minted doctor, and to his advantage, he's always had a secret sixth sense, a sensitivity to the non-physical. But quickly, one patient after another assigned to his care began to die from mysterious causes. As he tries to juggle these inexplicable deaths with the demands of being a first-year resident, things rapidly spiral out of control. Visions begin to plague Mitt, visions of a little girl in a blood-stained dress, blood-curdling screams in the distance, and worse. As bodies mount and Mitt's stress level rises, he finds himself drawn to the monumental abandoned Bellevue Psychopathic Hospital building, which, to his astonishment, has somehow defied the wrecking ball and still stands a few doors north of the modern Bellevue Hospital high-rise. Forcing an unauthorized entry into this storied but foreboding structure, Mitt discovers he's more closely tied to the sins of the past than he ever thought possible. Once again, the book is called Bellevue, and it's a novel by Robin Cook. Now let's take a look at a short summary of a book called The House of Cross. It's a new one by, of course, James Patterson. Supreme Court candidates are being murdered, and only Alex Cross and John Sampson can take the case in the House of Cross. Now, Alex Cross's innate nature is to protect people. If he has a weakness, it's his family, especially his children. They're the chink in his armor, but aside from that, it's tough to get at him. In Washington, D.C., the president-elect is planning her inauguration. The list of Supreme Court candidates is highly confidential until it becomes evidence in Detective Alex Cross's toughest investigation. One candidate is gunned down. A second is stabbed. A third is murdered near midnight on a city street. Cross is the FBI's top expert in criminal behavior. For the sake of his family, his city, and his country, he must put himself in the most dangerous place there is, inside the mind of a diabolical killer. It sounds like a good one. It's a new one from James Patterson called The House of Cross. Now let's move on to the latest book release by Danielle Steele. This one is called Trial by Fire. Here's the plot for this one. Exposition of a tangled tragedy, about which it took years before anyone knew what really happened and who was truly to blame. Well, it all happened in 90 seconds. A 2003 conflagration in a Rhode Island nightclub that killed 100 people and badly injured many more, and that stands today, James notes, as the nation's deadliest rock concert. Name a cause, though, and you enter Rashomon territory, with many contributing factors ranging from a local culture, in which it was a badge of honor to figure out how to manipulate the system to one's advantage, to the installation of improper building materials and perhaps willful violations of building codes. Two brothers owned the station nightclub, but were preparing to sell it when the band Great White played there. Now, when the band's road manager set off a pyrotechnic display, a foam-clad wall caught fire, and within that short span of time, nearly everyone who had been inside had died or been severely injured. The author's account is minutely detailed, its technical discussions punctuated by human interest story portraits of the victims. It is often repetitive, sometimes to emphasize a point, sometimes seemingly carelessly. What emerges from this story is a blend of cascading effects and unintended consequences. The flammable foam had been installed in an effort to deal with neighbors' complaints about noise, for instance, and the nightclub had no sprinkler system. Those sprinklers weren't required by code, and the deadly danger was never noticed during multiple fire inspections. Considering James' exhaustive examination of the facts and the back-and-forth argumentation regarding fault, it is surprising that the legal consequences were not more severe. The fire inspector, for example, received a raise from the town and then retired early on disability, or more broadly, distributed. An unsettling history of horrific events whose memory is still fresh. Once again, the book is called Trial by Fire, and it was written by Danielle Steele. Now here's a new one by Janet Ivanovich. It's called Now or Never, 31 on the Run. Now, of course, Janet Ivanovich has written a staggering number of bestsellers, 45 to be exact, over the past 28 years. And in addition to her number one Times bestselling Stephanie Plum novels and many other books as well. Here's what Now or Never is about. She said yes to Morelli. She said yes to Ranger. Now Stephanie Plum has two fiancés and no idea what to do about it. But the way things are going, she might not live long enough to marry anyone. While Stephanie stalls for time, she buries herself in her work as a bounty hunter, tracking down an unusually varied assortment of fugitives from justice. With timely assists from her stalwart supporters, Lula, Connie, and Grandma Mazur, Stephanie uses every trick in the book to reel in these men. But only she can decide what to do about the two men she actually loves. She can't hold Ranger and Morelli at bay for long, and she's keeping a secret from them that is the biggest bombshell of all. Now or never, she has to make the decision of a lifetime. Once again, the book is called Now or Never, 31 on the Run by Janet Ivanovich. Now here's a book entitled Defense Protocol, and this one is by Brian Andrews, Jeff Wilson, and Tom Clancy. Chinese President Li Jianjun plans a sneak attack on Taiwan, and it's up to the Jack Ryan administration to stop him without going to war. President Li announces a naval exercise, but his real plan is Operation Sea Serpent, the lightning reunification of Taiwan. His Minister of Defense, Admiral Quinn Haiyu, thinks the idea is crazy because a great number of people would die, but he can't say so. Li is not a man to be challenged, and he's already had one of his ministers executed. But Quinn wants to stop the war before it begins. Perhaps he can get word to the Americans so they can cut off the mad scheme, and he's troubled by whether his actions will make him a traitor or a patriot. A Western asset nicknamed the Spider helps facilitate his dangerous disappearance as he attempts to leave China, and authorities in Beijing don't know if he's been kidnapped or has he defected. Meanwhile, the Ryan administration wants to get him safely extracted from mainland China. President Ryan orders that an American naval vessel will transit through the Strait of Taiwan, which the People's Republic has blockaded. Will there be a bloody showdown that triggers a major war? So much can go wrong, and there are series regulars like John Clark and Ding Chavez at the tip of the spear. And there's also Katie Ryan, a lieutenant commander with the Office of Naval Intelligence, who's deployed to Taiwan because she's one hell of an intelligence analyst who thinks outside the box. She's a rising star who refuses to trade on her relationship with her father, President Ryan. Well, there's not much violence, although there's enough to call it a military thriller. One brave American is fading fast from around to his chest, but he has time to smile about that hot Katie Ryan. Yes, yes, we all like the Ryans. The novel's big question is not which nation wins, but whether they fight. Bravery and clear thinking will have to come from both sides. By the way, Jack Jr. isn't in this one. It's Katie's time to shine. Plenty of excitement for Clancy fans all the way around. This is Defense Protocol, written by Tom Clancy, along with Brian Andrews and Jeff Wilson. Now here's a new one from the very popular author, Nora Roberts. This is The Mirror, the Lost Bride trilogy, and it is book number 2 in that series. Here's the plot for this one. When Sonia McTavish inherits the huge Victorian mansion on the coast of Maine, she has no idea that this house is haunted. Now, the footsteps she hears at night, the doors slamming, and the music playing are not figments of her imagination. In her dreams, she sees glimpses of the past. In the present, she finds portraits of brides. And when she has visions of an antique mirror, she is drawn to it, sensing it holds dark family secrets. Well, then one night, the mirror appears, and Sonia glides through this looking glass into the past and sees a bride murdered on her wedding day, the circle of gold torn from her finger. It is a scene that will play out again and again. A centuries-old curse that must be broken and a puzzle she must solve if there is any hope at all of breaking the curse. This one's called The Mirror. It is the second book in the Lost Bride trilogy, and it is by Nora Roberts. And you're listening to Heard Any Good Books Lately, a production of the North Carolina Reading Service. I'm George Douglas. Thanks so much for joining me today. Let's move on to another book. This one is called Aunt Ivy's Cottage, and it's by Kristen Harper. Up in the attic, with views across the sparkling bay, she opens the lid of the carved trunk. Carefully moving aside the delicate linen wedding dress once worn by her great aunt, she unpacks all the smaller boxes inside until she finds the leather-bound diary. She knows this will change everything. All Zoe's happiest childhood memories are of her great aunt Ivy's rickety cottage on Dune Island, being spoiled with cranberry ice cream and watching the tides change from the rooftop. Now heartbroken from a recent breakup, Zoe can see her elderly aunt's spark is fading and decides to move to the island so they can care for each other. When she arrives to find her cousin Mark sitting at the solid oak kitchen table, she knows why Aunt Ivy hasn't been herself, because Mark, next in line to inherit the house, is pushing Ivy to move into a nursing home. Well, when the cousins clashing over what's best for Ivy, Zoe is surprised when the local carpenter who's working on Ivy's cottage takes her side. As he offers Zoe comfort, the two grow close. Together they make a discovery in the attic that links the family to the mysterious and reclusive local lighthouse keeper, and throws doubt on Mark's claim. Now Zoe has a heartbreaking choice to make. The discovery could keep Ivy in the house she's loved her whole life, But can Zoe trust that the carpenter really has Ivy's best interest at heart? And will dredging up an old secret destroy the peace and happiness of Ivy's final years and tear this family apart for good? It's called Aunt Ivy's Cottage, and it's written by Kristen Harper. Now here's another book from the Robert Parker series, Robert B. Parker's Hot Property, it's called, by Mike Lupica and Robert B. Parker. Spencer investigates a case that hits dangerously close to home in this latest installment of Robert B. Parker's beloved series. Spencer is waiting out the latest Boston snowstorm when he gets word that Rita Fiore has been shot. Now, Rita's always been a tricky one, flirting with Spencer for years. She's an ever-present figure that transcends friendship in Spencer's circle. But at the end of the day, Rita is family, and family will always be protected. Both a pit bull in the courtroom and provocateur outside it, Rita is no stranger to controversy. But as one of the city's toughest lawyers, Spencer knows that there's no short list of suspects who might want to enact revenge. With Rita's life hanging in the balance, it's up to him to get to the bottom of things, even if it means unearthing some unsavory secrets that might just lead him into an age-old game of lies and deceit. Once again, that one is called Robert B. Parker's Hot Property. It's a new one by Mike Lupica and Robert B. Parker. Now we have a couple of books coming up by Freda McFadden. She has been on the top 10 list at the North Carolina State Library for several months now, I think. This one is a new twisting thriller from the number one New York Times best-selling author of The Teacher and The Housemaid. She's looking for the perfect man. He's looking for the perfect victim. Here's the plot. Sidney Shaw, like every single woman in New York, has terrible luck with dating. She's seen it all. Men who lie in their dating profile, men who stick her with the dinner bill, and worst of all, men who can't shut up about their mothers. But finally, she hits the jackpot. Her new boyfriend is utterly perfect. He's charming, handsome, and works as a doctor at a local hospital. Sydney is swept off her feet. Then the brutal murder of a young woman, the latest in a string of deaths across the coast, confounds police. The primary suspect, a mystery man who dates his victims before he kills them. Sydney should feel safe. After all, she is dating the guy of her dreams, but she can't shake her own suspicions that the perfect man may not be as perfect as he seems. Because someone is watching her every move. And if she doesn't get to the truth, she'll be the killer's next victim. This is a dark story, as you can tell, about obsession and the things we'll do for love. It's the number one New York Times best-selling author, Freda McFadden, and she proves that crimes of passion are often the bloodiest. Now, as I mentioned, we have two books by Freda McFadden this month, and the next one I'm going to talk about is one that I referenced, actually, because it predated the one that I just read about. It's called The Housemaid is Watching by Freda McFadden. And this is from New York Times, USA Today, and Wall Street Journal best-selling author. McFadden comes the next installment of the unbelievably twisty, tension-packed, and globally best-selling Housemaid series. This book can be enjoyed as a standalone read, and once you start, it will have you up all night racing through the pages until the final explosive twist. You must meet our new neighbors, Mrs. Lowell gushes and waves across the picket fence. I clutch my daughter's hand and smile back, but the second Mrs. Lowell sees my husband, a strange expression crosses her face. In that moment, I make a promise. We finally have a family home. My past is far, far behind us, and I'll do anything to keep it that way. I used to clean other people's houses. Now, I can't believe this home is actually mine. The charming kitchen, the quiet cul-de-sac, the huge yard where my kids can play. My husband and I saved for years to give our children the life that they deserve. Even though I'm wary of our new neighbor, Mrs. Lowell, when she invites us over for dinner, it's our chance to make friends. Her maid opens the door wearing a white apron, her hair in a tight bun. I know exactly what it's like to be in her shoes, but her cold stare gives me chills. The Lowell's maid isn't the only strange thing on our street. I'm sure I see a shadowy figure watching us. My husband leaves the house late at night, and when I meet a woman who lives across the way, her words chill me to the bone. Be careful of your neighbors. Did I make a terrible mistake moving my family here? I thought I'd left my darkest secrets behind. But could this quiet suburban street be the most dangerous place of all? Well, to find out, you'll have to read or listen to The Housemaid Is Watching by Freda McFadden. And we have time for just one more. You recognize this name. He's on almost every month. David Baldassi has written a book. It's called To Die For. The 620 man returns, this time sent to the Pacific Northwest to aid in a complicated FBI case. And he's about to come face to face with his nemesis, the girl on the train. Travis Devine has become a pro at accomplishing any mission he's given. But this time it's not his skills that sent him to Seattle to aid an FBI in escorting orphan 12-year-old Betsy Odom to a meeting with her uncle, who is under federal investigation. Instead, he's hoping to lay low and keep off the radar of an enemy, the girl on the train. Now, it might finally be time for Devine and the girl on the train to come face to face. Devine is going to find out the difference between his friends and his enemies, and in some cases, they might well be both. Once again, this one's called To Die For by David Baldacci, and it's on the top 10 list for the month of February. And that's all the time we have for this month's edition of Heard Any Good Books Lately. I'm George Douglas. I hope you enjoyed the program today. If you'd like more information about how to become a patron of the State Library of North Carolina Accessible Books and Library Services, simply Google or search for Accessible Books North Carolina Library. Or you can call 888-388-2460. You can also use those same numbers to join the Friends of the State Library of North Carolina Accessible Books and Library Services. This program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Heard Any Good Books Lately will be available right after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until next time.